Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. You can listen to The Mike O'Mara Show at MikeO'MaraShow.com.
Let's get started.
It's The Mike O'Mara Show with Mike O'Mara, Oscar Santana, and Rob Spiewak. Now, here's Mike.
About maybe I want to say like a month now ago, you came in saying that you had a very interesting family story that you unearthed and you wanted to talk about.
Well, it came
been
up,
mentioning it all the time.
It came up sort of organically, and I went home and I did some Googling and I found aspects to it that I didn't know. And it's weird because I don't know the guy, but he's not that distant to me because he is my mom's first cousin and his father is my mom's godfather. So there was a time when the families were, I mean, very, very close. His mom is my mother's sister, to make it perfectly clear. My mother's, my mom's mom's sister.
Wasn't he your first cousin once removed?
No, I think it's second cousin. I did some Googling. I think this is called a second cousin.
I have trouble with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
we had that discussion when we had Ann Dowd from...
the
television program on.
Yeah.
My family still argues about it. It's ridiculous about what the relation really is with all that. Where did you become first aware that there was a controversy and we'll just call it a cousin, surrounding this cousin?
Well, I mean, I knew of him. Like, if you look at the old black and white pictures that have like the white border on them, the ones you always see in albums, like when you visit your grandparents, there's pictures of him in our front yard. I mean, I knew of the guy and I know the name. It's not a name we share, but because he was married, you know, his father was from outside.
Don't worry about the minutia of that because you'll confuse me with that. Was there any presence in your life?
No,
at all
I've never met him because something happened that was unclear even to my mom, that the father, the villain in the story, his father alienated himself from the family somehow. And to a point where my Aunt Bet, she was a very sweet lady, but would get confused when she got really upset. One time called him a two-eyed son of a bitch.
Because, why would she get confused?
Because she was just...
Sounds like two stories.
She was a little goofy, and like she confused two-faced and son of a bitch. So she called
So she gets so angry that
she would misspeak.
Messed up the inside.
Yeah. She was a silly lady. But anyway, so...
It could be a show title, two-faced son of a bitch.
Two-eyed son of a bitch. So understand that by the time that my mom had gotten to be like a teen... The family was sort of separate, but growing up, they were close, okay?
Okay.
And so I knew of them because of the family name. And how
were they a farming family like your side of the, like the Stalka?
No, this is from the Stalka side of the family.
Oh, this is from the Stalka?
This is not a Spiewak thing. But,
but
this family was not, my grandmother married into the farming side. So they come from these are city folk. They were in Arlington. They're an Arlington family. And so... I was starting college in 1993, and the front page of the Richmond, we were assigned as communication students to subscribe to the Richmond Times-Dispatch. It was one of the things we did. And the front page says, man found guilty in faking death scheme, or something to that effect. And I'm reading the front page, and it's Matt's name. And I call my mom right away, which is a big deal.
She recognized the name right away.
Yeah, I mean, and this is 1993. It's a long distance call from a payphone. I call my mom, and I said, "Is this
our Charlie? Why are you taking a picture?
My view from being Oscar today."
It'll be part of your Instagram
story. I
knew you
were going to ask me. I was like, "Hey, I'm Oscar.
I have ADD. I have complete ADD when I'm looking
like,
at a television monitor.
I take so many pictures
like
of this show.
Rob's like starting a story, and Charlie's just doing this.
Yeah. let's face it, Mike. I have nothing to do with this story, so I'm going to take a goddamn picture, okay? Let Rob go on with the damn story, all right?
Jeez. Charlie, do you have ADD? Do you have attention deficit disorder?
Apparently I do, okay? I'm not pleased that you're pointing it out in public today. Thanks a lot. Rob, on with the damn story.
Look, apply. All right, go ahead. All right.
So I call my mom, which is a big deal because it's a long distance call from a payphone. I said, is this the guy? Is this our cousin Matt? And she says, oh my God, yes. I can't believe it. Because from what we
did
know.
Did she know anything about it when you called her?
No, we had to all sort of reverse engineer the whole story. And it would eventually get covered in the Post. So it made the story up to DC because he comes from Arlington. He has three lovely sisters that we're still in touch with. And I've met them since then. But he is just a screwball. And so I found this from the Washington Post. This is March 28th of 1992.
This
and
is
I quote,
a blood relative.
And now,
yes, my mom's cousin.
Story.
My mom's cousin, the son of my mom's godfather. When
Matthew? You know, when you get into the weeds with that, it's just like you can't help yourself by giving the by giving the detail. Just say cousin.
Okay.
You say, son of your mom's godfather sounds like there's no blood relative at all.
No, but yeah. I mean, the fact that the families were at one point that close is what I'm trying to indicate, that he was named godfather.
So, well, it confused me.
Okay, I'm going to just call him Matt, okay?
All right.
When Matt fell overboard off the coast of Sicily 7 years ago, it looked like the tragic end of an idyllic vacation. In reality, it was a soggy start of an ill-fated scam to scoop up nearly $800,000 in insurance money.
Oh, ooh. He's a con man.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Matt, 47, hey, that's about what I am now, a Richmond resident who was reared in Arlington, admitted to federal prosecutors yesterday that he intentionally dived into the chilly Mediterranean in May of 1985 and swam ashore not far from a hotel where he had pre-registered under another name.
Oh my God, wow.
While authorities searched for his body, he slipped into something dry and went to work notifying six insurance companies of his untimely demise, according to a plea agreement signed in Richmond yesterday.
So he kind of did it hack.
Oh, he's so stupid. This is the official statement. This is the official statement from the U.S. attorney. U.S. attorney Richard Cullen suggested that, quote, he may have seen too
Bill
many.
Bill Cullen?
No, Richard Cullen.
Oh, I'm sorry. Richard Cullen. I thought you said William Cullen.
Well, the real cousin, please stand up, suggested that he may have seen too many adventure films.
Yeah.
Close quote.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So he did a totally hack. I would say probably the tell would be calling the insurance companies within maybe a half hour.
Hey, my name's Joe. Joe's dead.
Excuse me, sir. Now, wait. He goes on. The attorney goes on. The guy thinks he's brilliant and that he could outsmart everyone, including the insurance companies, his employers, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I concede he might be smart, but he's not smarter than us.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So, only one. Did anyone here insured by Prudential? I'm just curious.
No.
Prudential is the only insurance company that paid off.
So they actually paid.
Yeah, he got Prudential $98,240.85. It was invested in an account in Luxembourg.
You could blow that in a weekend.
Sure.
Now, did any, over the years, have you gotten more intel about this story?
Oh, Does anybody know? There's more stuff coming up. I want to tell you about it.
Hold on. Let's take a break. We're in the middle of Rob's grifter story.
Bob's cousin story continues.
We should make it like Serial, shouldn't we, the podcast?
It's Cousin, the series.
Or who's that guy from NBC?
Oh, Keith Morrison.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah. I can't
he put in for $800,000.
Yeah.
But was he really killed?
Pony with a toe in.
What did Pony say? I didn't hear that.
Yeah, you gotta.
Oh, yeah. Fall off the ship and call the insurance company.
Now, one of the facts that I came up with that I didn't know before, when he was in court, he said cousins. The reason he did it is that he thought his Chinese wife was spying on him for the FBI.
Would that have been a just a horrible lie?
That's a horrible lie.
I mean, when you do this type of thing, you got to be a little nuts, too.
Yeah.
Was there any delusion or evidence of delusional behavior?
Well, I will say this. The last time we had sort of a family get-together and my mom's cousins were there, he's still alive. He served his... his debt to society, and he's in touch with the family, but only through third parties. So occasionally, someone will write a letter to my cousin Frankie and say, Matt's okay, he's doing okay. If you need to reach Matt, call me, I'll let him know.
So nobody reaches out?
No, he's touched in the head.
So that's what I was asking.
Yeah.
So
that's the theory in the family is that
he just was nuts.
Yeah,
he's living in a box down by the river.
Well, I don't know that he's living in a box. I mean,
come on,
he might be in a box. Okay.
Now I know how to get your little insurance payout. I know what you're thinking.
Dive off a boat in the Mediterranean.
Outside of Prudential, your claim won't amount to diddly squat.
You think you're real smart? Who am I looking at? Al Capone? Supervillain Al Capone?
Oh, God. So he's touched a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. Or paranoid. Okay. I mean, there's obviously... He's not on the grid. So in that case, some people might say he's the sanest one of us all. But he was driven to do this.
The grifter thing runs through your whole family, doesn't it? A little bit, least on like your. I know you always talk about your dad scamming people.
It's more of a Bruce thing. It's more of my Uncle Bruce, but I think we all have a little bit of it.
Is Bruce the guy I met out in
he's been
Vegas?
To two of our Vegas shows.
I love Bruce.
Oh,
nice
he's the
guy.
Best.
Very nice.
And
man.
Now a everyday diehard listener. So hello, Bruce.
Okay. Hi,
is
Bruce.
Very cool.
Hello, Bruce.
How you doing, buddy?
Federal agent said that he thought up the scam. My cousin thought up the scam in 1985.
After watching an episode of Columbo.
Yeah, but I mean, seriously, let's put this in historical perspective. 1985, the world was very different. I mean, no internet, no easy way to like find a Google to somebody to what they are or anything. Yeah. So probably
I remember
in his
one
head,
particular thing. That's
probably
when,
was a good idea back then.
That's when the Don and Mike show started.
Exactly.
1985, 86. I remember one particular thing about 1985.
I don't think there was any of that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So he was stories. At this point working in Germany for the U.S. Army. And so he went from Germany to Sicily, thought up the scam, then went to Illinois, where he started to obtain fake identifications. Now, I have here from another court case a list of all of his aliases that he used.
Oh, my gosh. This is great.
So, wow, this is amazing,
Rob. This is great.
Okay, so this is from the U.S. Court of Appeals, Fourth Circuit. This was posted February 24th, 1993. They list his first name, United States of America Plaintiff Appellee v. my cousin, a.k.a. Robert Lee Dorsey, a.k.a. Lee Dorsey, a.k.a. H. Smithton, a.k.a. Robert Gale, and here's the best one because he's from this town, a.k.a. Peter Arlington.
Oh, Peter Arlington.
Wow.
It sounds like a bad superhero. I'm Captain Arlington.
Peter Arlington. That's so... I mean, but I keep going between the guy might have been touched or deluded to the guy might have been a... When you have multiple aliases, this isn't your first time trying to scam people.
But when you're really smart... I've always thought this. When you're really smart, you give up something else. And maybe he lacked a little sanity to get the brilliance to put this scheme together. And I'm not saying it's brilliant, but I mean, it almost worked.
I was saying that my point was, this might not have been the first time he scammed people.
It's possible.
Probably true. Yeah. But wait, the story does grow a little hair once he gets to jail. But I do want to say when he was found, when he was discovered, remember, he did that in 85. He was arrested in 92. So he got away with the $92,000 for quite some time.
Yeah.
He was found in Richmond. Arrested on February 7th, 1992, living under the name Robert L. Dorsey and employed as a $21,000 a year computer operator for a law firm.
Hey.
Wow.
They'll hire anyone.
So he was listening in
this
Richmond.
This is like
he was living in
Mr.
Richmond.
Dorsey. That's what it really is.
He's probably listening to this podcast.
Well, it's also with Italy and stuff. I mean, doesn't it sound like the Matt Damon movie? Yeah. It sounds a little bit like this.
No, it sounds it sounds like Catch Me If You Can.
A little bit like Catch
because
Me
I
If
met
you.
That guy and
oh,
he
you
was,
met Frank Abagnale?
Oh, I went to a lecture he gave and then I watched the movie and read the book. I was like totally blown away. Super cool guy. That's super cool.
What
super
is
cool guy.
Obviously he's not anything like doesn't look anything like Leonardo DiCaprio. What was the
he's a good looking
was
guy.
The person was you know. The personality similar to the way DiCaprio played him in the movie a little bit or
it's hard to tell because he's older. Yeah.
Right.
So just what you just said, I'm not great with age, Mike, but he was 60, at least when I met him. So looking at him as a 25-year-old guy conning his way onto being a co-pilot or pilot or whatever, it's really hard to see. But I think he probably was a dashing cut of a guy as a young man.
Oh, we call him charismatic. He was on the Tonight Show.
Definitely charismatic. Definitely charismatic. He had that.
It's easy to find long form interviews of him on YouTube, and his stories are great.
His stories are fantastic.
And that movie holds up. I love that film.
Yeah. You know, when I listen to this story about your cousin, I am just thinking as much as
he could have been Frank Abagnale.
It's a tragedy, and obviously he got caught and he went to jail. Americans are just fascinated by this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's really trying to get over on the man. But gets hairier and hairier.
He goes to jail, and he should.
Let's hear it.
He's guilty and all this stuff, and he's no longer in Sicily, and they're no longer saying, hey, come on his way, Mr. Arlington. We have a new table right here.
I'm waiting for Mike to do the voice from Andy Dufresne. Had to crawl through 3 foot.
I never understood. Yes, sir. What was his name? Lee Dorsey? Lee Dorsey crawled through 300 yards of filth. No, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mike. I really wanted that.
You're welcome, Charlie.
He's in jail. I'm going to do a slight parallel story to help explain what's about to happen. In 1997, a Virginia Beach lawyer is being held in Spain on federal fugitive charges, and he gets shipped back to the United States. He's found guilty, and he's put in jail with my cousin. So they start plotting. This guy that has been brought in from Spain is so pissed at his judge that found him guilty that he's bemoaning the fact to his cellmate, my cousin. So my cousin from jail starts to cook up another plot.
This does have some legs.
Oh, my
Holy crap.
God.
Now, I don't know. Nobody in the family knew about this, but I was able to bunny trail to it. What my cousin found is a guy who was going to be released before them from jail, and they were cooking up a deal to pay him to, and I quote, throw acid in the face of and or break the legs of the judge.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And
this is going from like the innocent fake your death, which wasn't all that innocent. To
no, not really.
No. I mean, committing some sort of potential attempted murder.
Yeah, this is... Go ahead, Charlie.
It's quite a mix, Rob. The acid in the face or break the legs.
That's
it's a completely different skill set.
This comes from this is from the Norfolk archives of their court, okay? It says, Hirschfield allegedly arranged a 1993 meeting of my cousin and the inmate. Hirschfield is the guy that came from Spain. During which my cousin asked the inmate to assault Judge Clark by, quote, taking the victim's glasses off and throwing acid in the victim's eyes or breaking both legs.
That's so weird.
And that's according to my cousin's indictment, which added a little time to him staying in jail. Yeah. The judge was never attacked.
Yeah. Wow. But they were going to remove the glasses, so the glasses would have been okay. think about optical wear.
You don't hit a guy with glasses.
I mean, just...
So,
all right, here's a question I have before you go on.
All right.
Wow.
As far as the sisters, your mom, and the memories of this guy growing up.
Right.
The people that had contact. Any clue about, was there always something amiss with this dude?
I have to say this, is that remember, there was sort of a turn when my mom was like a teenager where the family became a little more distant from our family. But according to my mom's memory and all of my cousin's memories that I'm still in touch with, he was always a little off. And his dad was always a little off. And, you know, it's hard to bring up a memory. My mom was 10 in 1960.
Yeah.
So we're looking at like nearly 60 years ago. It's hard to put your finger on what's, you know, the details of what makes you have a lingering memory of someone being different. But he was a little to a point that when I brought my mom knew all about the faking death story, and the whole family did. And we sort of joked it off because it was just, you know, a very distant relative pulling some shenanigans and ultimately getting caught. But when I came to her,
I wouldn't call throwing acid in a judge's face shenanigans.
That's what I'm
saying.
Jumping
off the ship's funny, but the acid's not funny.
When I got to the arranging for the leg breaking of a justice, a member of the justice system, my mom and I, we just went, know, that's that adds a lot to it. And also, no one in the family knew about it. So if you ever go in and use the Google to find out what your family's...
Were you the one that found this?
Yeah, I found out.
So you're the sleuth? You're the family sleuth?
My favorite thing that I discovered is that his alias was Robert Arlington.
Yes.
Robert Arlington. forget that. That's Rob right there, Charlie. Forget about the acid in the face. He likes the crazy.
Well, I mean, let's focus on what's funny. I mean,
my name is Arlington.
Arlington. I'm sorry. It was Robert Dorsey. Peter Arlington.
Yes, Peter Arlington.
Yeah. And have you gotten this to the whole family? Has this gone out through
the pipeline? No, I wanted to break it on this show, and then I'll tell the family.
The Peter Arlington story.
Yeah,
wow,
so
that's amazing,
go.
Rob. That is absolutely amazing. Wow.
The best of O'Mara.
Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show. Rob and I are just having dueling music shows today where we're not doing the DJ talk-up stuff, but we're going deep into our music collections to find obscure cuts, not necessarily all non-hits, but really deeper stuff that we listen to.
Stuff that speaks to us.
Now, before we went to break, you said you were going to maybe dive in
to your bluegrass choice. Yeah. I didn't know you liked bluegrass.
I do. Actually, there are two albums that the Dillards did.
You said you liked bluegrass that got me excited, and then you said you found out because of the Andy Griffith Show.
No, I didn't find out because of the Andy Griffith Show. I found out because my dad played it. But they did two albums that I really, their best albums are called Copperfields and Wheatstraw Suite, and I kind of see those as the Rubber Soul and Revolver of bluegrass music because they really combined a pop sound that made it almost more palatable, but it was still bluegrass. This goes back earlier, and this is a song that they always performed, and this is a great example of their work too. It's definitely old school before they started to cross over, but as again, pure music. How do you argue with this?
Right. Here's where I'm with you.
Okay.
You can go to a lot of bluegrass festivals.
Right.
And one of the things I love is at least if they keep it at a certain pace.
Mm-hmm.
I like fast-paced bluegrass.
I agree with you.
If you're doing slow, when I'm on, that's to me cheating. It's not fair.
You can even do, in bluegrass, you can even do a ballad up-tempo, and it works.
Right.
But this, to me, it's a great little story song about a man who made moonshine and got shot and killed. But
it's really, I mean, I love that pace because that's just, it's hard to do.
It is. It is.
And I want to see people accomplish something that's difficult, and it's a great musicianship. I really love that.
I'm glad we played it. So, Pony.
All right. Guys, what do you think?
You know, I think it starts out a little Deliverance-y, but then it gets a little bit more interesting once he starts telling the story, and it's not bad.
It's funny that Deliverance would actually sour Pony to an entire genre of music.
Well, that one scene was pretty rough.
Which one?
It was difficult.
I don't know.
Maddie, what is your overall take on blue? You said it made you smile before.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. If it was a battle of the bluegrass, I think I'd like Mike's better.
Sure.
But I do enjoy this. I liked it a lot. Yeah. But
well, it's simple, Maddie. That's because mine is better.
Correct. Yes. That's objectively. Really,
yes. Now, at number two, I try harder.
Now, I am seriously playing songs that I listen to a lot.
Okay.
I listen to often. That's what the whole thing was born with, because I got that Huey Lewis song, that new one, that motivated me to go deep into my collection of music and go, this might be an interesting, just the stuff we listen to. Now, this is a common, well-known song based on a movie, and I love it. I love it all the time, and it's just fantastic for me to listen to. Talk about make me smile.
Yeah.
This is something that makes me smile every time I hear it. I love it.
Yes!
I love everything about it. Austin Powers, The Spy Who Loved Me, repopularized this song. And this is Quincy Jones. The song's called Soul Bossa Nova. I think you're going to like this. This is what I listen to. That's what a nerd I am.
Not a nerd.
Just walking around the house.
You are so not
chores.
A nerd because every now and then people will bring up Quincy Jones now and people say, oh, he's a screwball, he's a nut. But he was so brilliant in every aspect of his career.
There it is. You've heard it before. So I love it. I just love it standalone. Doesn't have to be with the movie.
Do you like it as well as the theme to Sanford and Son?
Yes, I do. Massiello, what do you think of that?
I like it, but I don't think I could listen to it like every day. I feel like I'd
stand alone.
Yeah, I feel like I have to listen to it like every couple months, and I beat into it. But I think I would burn out on it pretty quickly.
She's wrong, by the way. It gets better every time you hear it.
That's fine.
Bloom.
It is a classic. It's almost as if that song was made for that movie in advance.
I agree.
I think it's fantastic. Love it.
Good use of it.
And by the way, if you've never seen Austin Powers and the opening production number that he does with this, it is, I mean, I you know, instant love. That could have been a crappy movie for the rest of the entire film. It wasn't. It was very funny. I think the ones after that were a little bit of a stretch. But I'll tell you, that opening number, in the theater, to go in and see that first Mike Myers, Austin Powers movie, just pleased me greatly. So
he's got to be a nutcase, right?
Yeah, he's the least difficult to work with. That's what they say. That's the book on Mike Myers.
All right. Frank Sinatra has a storied career. And of course, it's hard to pick a bad Frank Sinatra song, but there are a couple for me that rise to the top. This is a really cool one because it's in an era in his career. I go back to this because of the choices he made in it. He did a thing in the mid-60s where he tried to sort of modernize his sound, and he would incorporate organ and stuff like that and not be the Sinatra that, you know, came through in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
This is an album called Sinatra and Company, and it's 1971. He's going back to the more traditional way he sang. But what happened is all that time that he was being the modern singer, he realized he had lower notes in his register that he never used because he's getting older. And so there's some really neat choices he makes vocally on this song. It's a bossa nova, and it's called Wave. And it is just...
Does he sing?
Oh, he does. It's just so cool.
But I've never heard of him.
Really? Wow. I don't think the album's in print anymore. But his voice.
So close your eyes.
Oh, okay. I know
the
song.
That's
a lovely way to be aware.
Once again, though, you're kind of playing genres after I'm playing genres.
In what way?
Kind of matching my genres, which is really starting to annoy me a little bit. I play a bossa nova.
Listen,
play a bossa
nova. Can dream or dream together.
How do you not love that? How do you not love that? And Mike, I also feel that it might be a little presumptuous of you to grab an entire genre, an entire tempo.
Well, I play bossa nova and you played bossa nova.
Well, okay,
let's
then,
be honest.
Okay, then
it's
you know
a pretty
what?
Narrow category of music. Pony, back me up here. He's playing the genres of music after I'm playing the genres
he's
of music.
He's cheating. He didn't get out of the cocky duty
cheating.
Car.
I selected it before you played soul bossa nova, and you know what? I think it might be a samba anyway.
All right, well, if you played it first. Maddie, what do you think of that? That's what I call elevator music.
Really?
Huh.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, I do kind of.
All right.
For me, I mean, Sinatra for me is the most nostalgic of anything you've played because all my dad listened to growing up is the Seriously Sinatra XM station, and that's all he listened to.
Right, and he's still, right?
Yes, yeah. Still. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it makes me think of my dad, makes me think of childhood. I like it a lot, and I mean, Sinatra's voice you can't really beat. So.
Oh, that's a really great capture of his voice. I just think that's an obscure one
it's a
that you never
album.
Hear.
I mean, I like the sound of it. And I never heard it. I never heard that song from Frank Sinatra. Now, moving on. There's a story behind this. Everybody could play a Prince song because everybody knows yep. Prince. Prince is, has so many hits, hit after hit after hit. This song, for me, was discovered not only when I was in the clubs, when it didn't really go over that well, but one night I was at a concert, at an actual Rolling Stones concert at the old Capitol Center.
Wow.
And the Rolling Stones played this on their column speakers before the Stones came out. And when they played this, I became even a bigger fan of this particular song. This is very little vocal. This is just a lot of power funk. This the Minneapolis sound.
Right.
And I wonder if anybody's even heard of this particular Prince cut. Let's see.
I can only imagine how this sounded in the arena.
It was amazing.
It had to be.
And I listen to it to this day. I just love the recording.
That's so great.
I'm going to let you go to the hook with this one simply because I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, we like a break behind, of course.
Yeah, this will take us to break.
All right. Here we go. Okay, now we can comment on it. What do you think, Rob Spiewak?
I like it. I mean, you can't argue with the production and the catchiness, but what I love about it is your story. I think that's amazing. There are a handful of records that you can remember where you were when you heard them, and
just
when you
the
can
bass response was yeah. amazing.
And when you can attach
Prince,
when you can attach a story to it, I love that. So for that reason, I think it's a great choice.
Bloom,
I think it has a great feel to it, just in general, and it almost kind of reminds me of like Parliament Funkadelic a little bit.
Yeah,
I like it a lot.
Okay, I like that analysis. That's it, Masiello.
Yeah, it's very funky. Like I can't stop tapping my foot. You know, like I just want to really get into it. So I like it.
You believe her?
No.
I don't either.
the best of O'Mara.
We're playing our favorite little cuts off of our iPads and our iPods and everything we have there. I kind of popped this on Rob at the last minute.
Oh, but, I love it. I love it.
What I want to happen is maybe out there in Listen Land, somebody will hear something they've never heard before, and it'll catch them like it caught me. Or you're going to say, I didn't know he liked that too with Rob and me, and I thought that would be fun. So it's Rob's turn on our favorite songs.
I'm going to get 100% grief on this one, but I'm unapologetic about it. This is from 1963, a hit single by a brother and sister act, and it was almost a mistake that it happened in studio, the way they performed it. But it actually, the composition goes back to the 30s. And it had been recorded and charted many times, but this was the biggest hit. That's why it has sort of a retro feel, even for a 1960s record. It's called Deep Purple, and it's by Nino Tempo and April Stevens. And it's just, to me, a really curious capture. Their voices work really well together, I think because they're brother and sister, but it's just catchy right from the get-go.
When a deep purple falls over sleepy garden walls, and the stars begin to twinkle in the night, in the mist of the memory.
So the song was 40 years old when they recorded it.
Oh, is my video breaking up again?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, it is. It is.
All right, I'll hang up and call.
Okay, go.
Rob, I got to be honest with you. I'm not digging it. I'm not feeling it.
I knew that it would be a tough sell. It was also recorded again and recharted by Donnie and Marie as a duet. But
That's good.
That's not helping
that's
my case, am I?
That's a selling point.
But it is. I just always thought immensely catchy. And it's a clever little song. I like it. So, again, I knew
massive,
it was...
massive thumbs down.
I knew it would be.
For me. Pony Boy, what do you think?
I think the guy sounds like he might be a little challenged.
Oh, listen here. This is neat. Listen. He whispers the lyrics.
Yeah, let's listen to this part.
Oh, this is changing everything.
It's a terrible recording, too. The quality of the recording is garbage.
Yeah.
So... it's marvelous. It's a marvelous thing. America loved it. It was a number one record.
Why don't you ask your...
Maddie, how much do you love this?
So you said it was a mistake?
No. It was. It sort of happened as it was going on. The thing about him whispering the lyrics to her is because she didn't know the words. And so in a rehearsal, he was whispering the words, and they were whispering the words to each other. And that's how it ended up on the recording.
The whole thing sounds like a mistake.
Well, I believe the mistake might have been playing
it. Oh, God, do we need a palate cleanser right now?
Please.
I'm going to play a borderline hit. I'm not sure where this charted, but I got to tell you something. It's one of my all-time favorites. Let's clean our palate with Chrissy Hynde here.
Yeah, I like it.
The Pretenders. One of their later hits in their career. Really fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I listen to this all the time. One of my favorite songs ever.
Don't get me wrong.
Love the beat.
Yeah, and her voice. Her voice is sensational.
And I love the bass lick.
I see neon lights.
Bass player's working overtime, believe it or not.
Yeah, he is. He didn't want to do another take. It's not as good as Deep Purple, but it's
so much better than Deep Purple.
Pretty good. No, that's a great one. That's probably that's the best Pretenders record, I bet.
I say thank you, like I wrote it. Thank you, Rob. Thank you.
Well, thank
Tony,
you.
What do you think?
That is instantly catchy, and the hook just hits right away. You get goosebumps. It's a fantastic song.
Ooh, Maddie Masiello.
I agree. Super catchy, and she just feels like a badass to me already. I have no idea who
she
this
is
person
a badass.
Is, but yeah. I respect her.
Chrissy Hynde, the lead singer, she was a badass. It's interesting you said that. She had that kind of voice like that.
Yeah,
drug abuser. But anyway, was she a drug abuser?
Oh, Mike, no one did drugs then. I will cleanse your palate going into break here because I know you're going to dig this. This is the best song on one of the best albums, the best sounding albums ever released. And I've seen it performed live the entire album twice. So, the album is Songs in the Key of Life, and it's Stevie Wonder's Sir Duke.
Okay. You know what? I'm all in on this.
Thank you.
I'm all in.
Everybody sing, yeah.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. And so this was a legendarily expensive album to make, and Stevie dragged his feet and lied to Motown about the progress because he was so in the mode of putting in a perfect album. And thank God they let him alone, because he released a double album that came with a single with four more songs on it. So it's a powerful pile of music, but the entire album is awesome. But this is my favorite song on the record.
Just because the record has a groove, don't make it in the group. But you can tell right away.
Madeline.
I mean, it's a fantastic song. I can't even, I have no complaints.
Do you know who it is? Do you know who Stevie Wonder is?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm
checking.
Come on.
Come on.
I don't know.
Come on.
All right, come on, Shelly. That pony?
Yeah, this is a 10 out of 10. It's fantastic, and bonus points for being blind.
It almost makes
us. You're a jerk.
I can't believe I walked right by that line.
I can't believe that you just said that. Okay, so my turn now, and yes. We're going to. I got a choice here. I can go relatively a contemporary artist that Maddie might not know, or I can go really, really old. Which do you want me to do?
I would like you to lead with really, really old. That's a curiosity for me.
All right, so this is an artist I have seen live, and it's hard for me to actually really pick what I want to play because there's so many different ones that I love from him. But this is, again, a la Ricky Skaggs. You'll find a lot of people that are in my music collection are virtuoso artists that are instrumentalists that are really the best of their generation. And this gentleman is no exception to that. This is a gentleman by the name of Pete Fountain.
He
was Mr. New Orleans. He was the greatest clarinet player probably ever. I was such a huge fan of Pete Fountain. And the thing about Pete Fountain is that he had a long-running gig at, I think it was the Hilton in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Sounds right.
He was ravaged by, I think it was Irma, that did a tremendous amount of damage to his place up in New Orleans. And then I think we lost him last year or the year before. I'm not sure. But this is one of his standards that he used to get requests for every time. It's called China Boy.
Yep.
And it's a live version again. And I hope you like this. This is Pete Fountain. Let's see what happens here. China Boy. Here we go. Live performance.
A little louder.
Can't turn it up, Rob. You're going to have to help me with these sends on this thing because I do the best I can. I could listen to this all day.
Dixieland jazz is happiness. And this is a great example of it, backed with amazing musicianship. How can you go wrong? There's not a misstep in there.
So I want to hear what the kids have to say about this.
You know, I think this has a fantastic beat. It's technically wonderful. The title might be a little racist. Who knows?
I think the title might be racist. I think you're absolutely right
about
that.
No, it's
about
a guy who sold dishes.
Oh, okay.
Is it really?
I'm just trying to help out.
Yeah, you're always a big help in this discussion. Thank you. Maddie Masiello, what do you think of my Pete Fountain?
I like it, and I appreciate the musicianship, but I actually almost wish the tempo was a little bit slower.
Hmm. Why?
I don't know. I just feel like I don't. The beginning was slower, and I feel like I liked that the best.
Let me play Lazy River for you, though.
Oh yeah,
here you go. You might like this.
Another great one, though.
This is another Pete Fountain classic. I got about 400 of them. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Maddie Masiello Theater. My name's Mike O'Mara. I'll be your charming MC for this evening. Our live auction's going to start after your desserts are completed. Right now, please enjoy the song stylings of the greatest clarinet player in the world, Mr. Pete Fountain. Oh, it's continuing. Oh, I've got a little more intro to go. While we are on the subject, check out the lobby for some of Ponyboy Matt Bloom's delicious Japanese candy. You'll enjoy every single bite of his bean paste and sugar mixture that looks like the blob. Pete Fountain. Oh, Pete Fountain, ladies and gentlemen.
Was he at the session?
I'm not.
There he is.
That's a little slower for you, Maddie.
Yeah, I mean, the other one, it was more impressive, but I like this one better, just to my...
That's Lazy River.
But still happiness. Just the clarinet is a happy instrument.
My God, Rob, we have to keep going. But
I know.
Do it.
All right. Do you have a song that you want played at your funeral?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to share it, or...
I might, but you go ahead first. I mean, obviously you're going to take this down a death row.
This is a song that has I've always liked. But when George Harrison died, I've not played a Beatles song today, and this is not a Beatles song. But
do you want this played at your funeral?
Absolutely, I do. I requested it. Is that when Ringo sang this song at a tribute concert to George Harrison, I welled up with tears because I saw an underlying meaning in the song. And it's really, the song is about a breakup. That's what the lyric is about. But when you listen to it, it could be about any sort of time that you lose a friend or a loved one. It's called Photograph. And it's the sense of the song is that he's broken up with this lady and all he has is a photograph and he realizes she's not coming back anymore. The production is faultless. And as you get a little older and a little wiser, I guess, you realize that when you're dealing with loss, it's tough, man. And this song speaks to that.
You know, it's on my original audition tape, believe it or not.
Was it on there? I didn't know
but
that.
But I'm not sure it's on there because I liked it or because it's on there because it was a hit at the time.
Yeah,
that's how old I am. I remember that.
But I think of all the solo Beatles efforts, this might be my favorite. I mean, even Paul's entire catalog, I think, can take a step aside and look at this record.
All right, so Ponyboy Matt Bloom, what do you think of Rob Spiewak's death song?
You know what? I think that's lovely. They start right from the hook, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Who was the person that he broke up with? Was it the...
He did not write this, so he's just singing a song.
Gotcha.
Yeah. He broke up with money when he left the Beatles. That was his
Pony, do you really like it? Because I'm not buying it.
You know what? It's I would say it's average good. It's kind of...
He's wrong, you know. He's wrong, you know.
It's okay. Medium.
Maddie Masiello.
Ringo Starr has his sight.
Well, it's hard for me to even tolerate anything having to do with the Beatles, but I already knew this song, and I do like it. And I also like kind of a sad song with sadder lyrics to kind of more of a upbeat melody.
I know what you mean.
Like
yeah,
more
yeah.
energy. So uh-huh. I kind of like that contrast, and I think it's a good song.
Oh, thank you. As I'm being lowered into the ground, Mike, play it loud.
This is on my wishes. I don't have like a formal thing yet.
Okay.
Somebody might say, you might want to prepare that. But this is from, I think it's a Disney film, I think, but I'm not sure. I really don't even know.
All right.
I just heard it because I heard it performed by Celtic women, these lovely Irish girls. And this is really syrupy. I didn't want to go in this particular
That's
direction.
All right.
But I listen to it all the time when I want to really... when I really want to be sad
yeah.
and I think about it, because it to me is like saying goodbye to somebody. And when they go away, when they float away, and they go somewhere else, you're going to send them a song. So that's what it is. Are you starting to laugh?
No.
Take the wave now and know that you're free.
This is so sad.
Turn your back on the land, face the sea.
This is the funeral
face
song?
Face the wind now so wild and so
It's a good
strong.
Funeral song. I like it.
When you
this version of it.
Wave to me and send me a song.
And I've asked my daughter to sing it.
Oh, that's because awesome.
Because she knows how to sing it. So that's, anyway. Now,
so Maddie,
I'm
can
so
you,
depressed
No, no,
now.
No, don't be I depressed. Really that's a good song. I think All it's right, good. Maddie, yes. What do you say?
I feel like that was Elsa from Frozen. Little girls
Maybe I'm going to have to change that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I didn't
Catherine's going to sing it from, okay, thank you. Pony, I don't even know if I want to ask you.
You know, it makes me wish that I was at my funeral.
The best of O'Mara.
Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show, brought to you by our bonus packages. If you are a student of podcasting, you may want some advice. For instance,
podcast experience is that important? Well, it's way up there.
Pressure under fire. Done this before. I don't want this to be his first podcast. Applied himself well. These are some of the things I'd have confidence in a young MD. Wait, we're talking podcasts, not the medical field. I'm exhausted from 30 nights. No person, even those of us who are superhuman, those of us with Herculean appetites for the diverse and the bizarre, even we can get tired. We're never rude. We don't cop out. We don't tell you that we're ill or that we're looking for the farmhouse in the middle of the desert or that we're parched. We don't tell you that maybe the check didn't come through this month and where the hell does it go anyway if you're a guy who's left 16 forwarded addresses. So what do you do? What's the answer? You need to join the club. The club of TMOS bonus show subscribers. Yeah, you're a little perturbed now. Kind of worried about the club. Don't worry about Jackie's the club. Just click the banner on our website and get access to all of our bonus content. You'll be helping TMOS. It's your passport to the ass-port. Copyright 2020. Buy the bonus show. MichaelMarishow.com. And now we're going to salute my man, Duke Siebert, on a trip to one of his favorite places. One of mine, too. The Audio Vault.
No, we're not doing it.
This is the Mike O'Mara Show in Fort Myers, and we'll be right back. Actually, we are back. Actually, Jaggy's back. I don't know. All right. So, Rob, you tell me we got about, what, 5 minutes maybe here? 2 minutes? 3 minutes?
You know what? Five would be good. 5 minutes would
five
be
minutes,
good. We'll give
right
them a little
here.
Extra bonus content today. They deserve it.
All right. One from you, one from me. I got to make it good.
All right. I got a great one here, and I think you're going to like it. This is from a genre that sort of blossomed in the early 70s. I would call it horn rock. And this is one of the best examples of one of the best bands. When you bought the 45 of this song, the single, they chopped the intro off, which is a shame because the intro is the best part. The band is Chicago, and the song is called Make Me Smile. And you hear horns and rock, and you hear, but know that this was a real touring band. They didn't have like a horn section they brought in. The trombonist and the trumpet player, they all toured together. This is a big organization and just such a good sound. And also, clever on the mix that they've actually got the rhythm guitar at the same level as the horns. It just makes this overall production sound so thick. Here's where the 45 would pick up right here. Great vocal, too. Great vocal.
Let's see what our children think.
You know what? This song immediately pops the second you hear it. I love it. It's very rich, very warm. And my grandfather, actually, one time got on an elevator and talked to a bunch of guys in the elevator, and they said, hey, we're in a band. And he says, oh, what's the name of the band? And they said, Chicago. And he says, it'll never make it.
Is that a true story,
yep,
Pony?
True story.
That's great.
That is so cool. I love that insight. Does the Mayor Masiello, have any private stories of bumping into Chicago and Buffalo?
Maybe. I don't know.
Have you heard of Chicago, Maddie?
I don't think so. I feel like the song sounds familiar to me, but I don't think I would have known it was Chicago.
If she knew Chicago, she'd probably be more familiar with like the Peter Cetera syrupy era of Chicago when they got
away
from this.
Which was the bad era.
Yeah. I still think their albums hold up, and this is another band that I'll drop a needle on and listen to the whole LP.
Do you remember, what's the name of the song where I announced that Carla was pregnant?
Oh.
Was that, does
was
anybody know what time it is?
Yeah, no, or, it's not Saturday.
No, it was the other one.
Does anybody really know what time it is? Yeah.
That's one. I love Chicago. I grew up with Chicago. Beginnings, which was a Chicago song, was the theme of my senior prom. It was very, very cool. I've always been a massive Chicago fan, but you'd be surprised. I probably don't have a tremendous amount of Chicago in my own music because I've heard it so many times.
They have a double disc greatest hits that's fantastic. You probably should get it.
Yeah, I remember this. I'll always remember this particular Chicago song because of the announcement I made.
Yes,
and
I remember it.
It was just, I don't know why, Beginnings was the theme of this. And it's just this era of Chicago before they became kind of soft rock.
Yeah, exactly.
Was really, really special. Here we go.
I'm going to be a daddy.
All right. So anyway, I'd like to relive that.
All right, we're going to wrap it up here.
Do you hold in your hand the last record?
I hope we got to do this again. This was fun. I hope the listeners enjoyed it. I sure did. It was really special. But I will tell you this. This is a true story. If you want me to share with you right now a song that I literally move to, that I will get up with my kid and I will dance to, this is the song. More than any other song in my collection,
okay,
this is the one that I do. You're going to mock me?
No.
You're going to laugh at me?
No.
But I swear to God, this is what I dance to, and I do it all the time. I swear to God, I am a huge fan, not necessarily of the band, but I love this song by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. What I got, you got to give it to your mama. What I got to give it to your papa. What I got to give it to your doctor. You do a little dancing and you drink a little water. What I got, you got to get it, put it in you. What I got, you got to get it, put it in you. Maybe I don't listen to it that often with my son.
No, I was going to say, is it an instant toe-tapper for him as well?
He doesn't know about the lyrics.
No, I'm not saying
that. He just listens to the beat.
I'm not saying
anything. And he sees his daddy dancing all around, doing these big giant steps around the living room. Yeah. Give it away, give it away. I can even get Carla to get up and move to this, you know? Is there a better song to squat and move your butt to?
No!
I don't think so. All right, and now our final reviews from the Peanut Gallery today. By the way, they deserve a round of applause.
I thought they did great.
They've done fantastic with their cruelty. It's been wonderful.
I think you stacked the deck a little bit by closing with something relatively current and upbeat. I think you're going to get high marks here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not faking this. I'm really not.
I know. Me neither.
I've got old stuff, but I just particularly like this song. It's a standalone, and
yeah.
I have it in my collection. Pony Boy.
Yeah, you know, I want to say I was probably sixth or seventh grade when this song came out. It's pure energy. It is absolutely exciting. Love this song.
Awesome. Very unique. Maddie Messia.
Yeah, totally agree. I feel like as a rule, the Red Hot Chili Peppers are just so cool and so fun, all their music. So you can't, this is a great song to dance to.
Well, that's great. And I'm going to also have it played at my funeral. Well, we have to get out of here. I hope you enjoyed.
I had a blast.
Our favorite songs. And that was very unique today. And, you know, it's me, it's Rob, Oscar's on vacation. So we're going to do whatever the hell we want.
Who wants to hear his music anyway?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to do it again next week as well.
Nice!
For Matty Masiello, Pony Boy Matt Bloom, also Rob Spiewa. Hope you enjoyed our music. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.
Aloha.
The Best of O'Mara.
Makes me think of that Perry Como video you sent me from SCTV.
With him sleeping while doing the concert.
Can't believe Eugene Levy's how spot on that
is. So
Como
great. Oh, no, not I.
Sleeping on a couch at his concert.
The food, I think, took you guys out of the. You're like thinking about the food.
Oh, you did a good job. Because
yeah, you did.
I can practically, with the Asian fusion, you're talking pretty close to, fatty Chinese food, and that. Yeah, that gives both.
Was
Robin
there a dessert
Neil
course?
Woody.
Oh yes.
Why'd you skip it?
No, we got it was like a meringue something, and there isn't like your typical desserts. It was we just got two separate desserts, a mousse of sorts, just absolutely glorious.
It was mousse. Where are you, Alaska?
It was mousse soup.
Mousse soup.
Come on down for mousse soup after.
News.
Brad Pitt has been linked to several women since he split with Angelina Jolie. Most recently, it was Aaliyah Shawkat from Arrested Development.
Really?
Well, don't believe everything you
read.
She
played maybe on Arrested Development.
Brad says, quote, I don't know many. I don't know how many women they've said I've been dating the last 2 or 3 years. None of it is true. Here's another revolution. Brad didn't always think of himself as the sex symbol you thought he was. He says, quote, I've had moments where I've seen pictures of myself from years ago and gone, that kid looks all right. But I didn't feel that way inside. I spent most of the 90s hiding out and smoking pot. I was too uncomfortable with all the attention. Okay.
That's why I smoke pot.
Oops.
Because I'm uncomfortable with my looks.
You're so good looking.
You constantly smoke.
Stop it. I know you guys say that. But when I look back at pictures like last year's Christmas party, I say that guy looks all right. But deep down, I don't think I look that good. And then I spark up.
That's right. Big fatty in the car.
Yeah, and that's just the driver.
The Hollywood Reporter has a list of the worst movies of the decade.
Oh, no!
And it includes five movies starring Adam Sandler, who might get an Oscar this year for Uncut Gems. He looked great in it. I want to see it. Here are the ones they came up with, alphabetical order. Number one, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Okay.
2012. Never saw it. The collective work of Adam Sandler, they specifically call out these five. Just Go With It, 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Jack and Jill,
that's
2011.
That's terrible. A winner there.
That's My Boy, 20. God, he makes garbage. He really does.
And you know
that's
what he's doing now?
That's My Boy, 2012.
He's doing the thing that some stars do. He'll set a movie in an exotic location and then film there because then he's at an exotic location.
Family vacation.
Exactly. They build it in.
The Cobbler, 2014.
Delicious.
And Pixels.
That was a big problem.
A bad thing.
Yeah. Number three is Cowboys and Aliens. Number four, the Emoji Movie.
I disagree with Cowboys and Aliens.
That's 2011 is Cowboys and Aliens.
It's Jon Favreau, if I'm not mistaken.
Which side did you root for?
No, come on. It's not about that. The concept, and it was actually a good movie with Daniel Craig. Starring.
All right. Well, they put it on there. The Emoji Movie, number four. The 50 Shades Trilogy. That's Gray, Darker, Freed.
And Cameron.
Number six.
Yes.
Number six. I didn't realize it was a trilogy. The Human Centipede Trilogy.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
Released in 2010, 2011, and 2015.
Speaking of release.
For it. People are so nasty.
Yeah, it's bad films.
Gross.
Eat poop. Number seven. The Last Airbender. Never even heard of that one. Anyone?
I have not either.
The first one was okay.
Number eight. Movie 43 in 2013.
I have no idea.
Number nine, This Means War, 2012. Is that Nicolas Cage, I want to say? Maybe.
Probably, if he hasn't been mentioned on the list so far. Play
and number 10 is Valentine's Day from 2010.
Terrible movie.
Harry Marshall!
Poor guy. Just picked a holiday and then died.
We're done talking.
It's possible that more serious directors will start dealing directly with streaming services because Netflix says that 26.4 million people watched the latest Martin Scorsese mob movie, The Irishman, its first week. That means about 16% of all Netflix global accounts watched it in the week following its release on November 27th. Mm. Can't beat that with a movie opening. And that number is expected to jump to 40 million households within its first month. Of course, no one checks these numbers. We just have to take their word for it, which is true. They just can throw them out there.
But you could see this happening now where, think about the director or the actor that's being attached to the film. There's a lot of ego if you're set up for money and you know, you've got your nut covered saying, do you want people to maybe see your film or do you want a portion of the globe to definitely see your
and
film?
And we're also seeing sort of a market reversal here. Like in the 60s and 70s when a show would get a 50-51 share on television because there was only three channels, right? Mm-hmm. But now everybody has Netflix. It's almost like a refocusing of the attention.
Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime.
Yeah, but I mean,
Disney Plus.
You take something huge like Netflix, which is, I still think, probably the leader of the game.
But those are
right
the four channels.
That's right. And so everybody has access to them. So we're going to start seeing huge numbers again. It's not as diverse as it was, say, 10 years ago.
Tomorrow, can we set aside some time to talk about streaming services?
Because
I had a really crappy night with Mrs. Maisel last night because of Amazon streaming.
Oh.
And then I'm like, well, this has got to be my computer system, my network. And then I popped on old Netflix started watching the Scarlett Johansson movie, the Marrying movie or whatever, the Married Life.
The one that she just got the nomination,
which is really, really good.
My Prime had a problem this weekend as well. I don't think.
Pay your bill, Oscar.
I'm paying everyone.
So I think it's Amazon Prime is just, first of all, the technology on Amazon Prime. Well, we'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah, I agree.
We will do it tomorrow. And you can talk about Disney Plus as well. We'll talk about them all tomorrow.
You want my
a new study monitored people as they drove in the car with one of two different things. I love this study. Their kid or a cake. And the researchers wanted to see which precious, fragile passenger made people drive more carefully. I think you know where this is going. You can probably see it. 95% of people drove more cautiously when they had a cake. than when they had their kids. 65% drove slower with a cake. 60% were more cautious and gentle with their braking. 50% took turns slower, and 45% used their phones less. The researchers said it's because the cake makes us snap out of autopilot mode. We're used to driving with our kids. We're not used to driving with cake. 72% of the people in the survey rated themselves above average drivers, too. That is so true.
I asked, you know, it's funny you bring this up. I asked the owner of our bakery where we're doing the fruitcake. She does gingerbread this time of year. And she just did a gingerbread house for a country club that is 24 inches tall, 30 inches deep, and 20 inches wide. I mean, if you think about it, this thing is huge.
Did Cornerstone cover the mortgage?
Gingerbread man. A holiday visit.
Do you know
there
the muffin
go.
Man?
The muffin man?
Not on Drury Lane?
And I said, do you deliver these? She says, oh, no, we have them delivered. Because it's, I mean, I can't imagine driving with something like that. Just, I mean, right. You wouldn't even have to get in a wreck. Just but stop like short. No, I would like to pull over with it.
There you go. Okay. Thank you.
Don't just look at it. Eat it.
That's right.
Smirnoff is trying to bring back the icing trend. I don't remember this trend. Maybe I missed it. You surprise someone with a bottle of Smirnoff ice and they have to chug it. They're selling a new line of fake gift boxes that look like they're for things like kitchen appliances, but just have a bottle of Smirnoff ice inside.
Sounds like they've invented this trend that never existed.
I think so. And I just read it because I'm a rube.
I mean, between the two of us, Mike. We've been following pop culture for 40 years. We would have heard about
icing.
It.
Yeah,
icing.
I think you're right. Absolutely. And now a little something something. Animal rescuers in Las Vegas said they're trying to capture pigeons spotted wandering with tiny cowboy hats on their heads. What? A video posted to Facebook shows a group of pigeons foraging in a Las Vegas parking lot, and some of the birds are wearing little red cowboy hats.
Mike, I have tape of the birds.
'Twas the night before Christmas. When all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
Not even a pigeon with a red helmet.
Las Vegas.
Red cowboy hat. Mariah Hillman, who runs the animal rescue group Lofty Hopes, said she is concerned about the welfare of the pigeons. Hillman said she is hoping to capture the pigeons and remove the hats. Of course, if the hats are attached with really strong glue, she might just pull the pigeons' heads off.
Oh, no.
That's from me. Sorry. Pigeons rights groups.
Sorry, I thought are, I was in.
Pigeons rights groups are also on their way to the scene because they believe the pigeons can wear any effing hat they want. There you go. That's two jokes for the price of one. I got the helmet off. You took the pigeon's head with it, too. I don't know.
A pet's heads are falling off.
Do not let Ozzy Osbourne remove the hats.
That's three jokes you got there for the price of what? We'll take a break, come back with the Audio Vault and Rob Spiewak right here on the Mike O'Mara Show. Without further ado, let's open up the Audio Vault for today. This is Wednesday, April 8, 2015. Rob Spiewak.
Seldom does something happen on morning TV so good that I feel I must call Mike in on the way to work. But I did today because Rand Paul and his curious haircut was on the Today Show, and they paired him with Savannah Guthrie. And I think that was a bad pairing, Mike. I think that sort of should have been a Matt Lauer interview. Your thoughts?
Two things on Rand Paul.
Two things.
I am interested in this man because when he gives a speech, he says things that interest me. I know he's a libertarian. I know he is extremely right-wing in some of his beliefs, but I am curious about him.
Love
and I'm not
it.
Curious about anybody else that's out there. The second part of it is that hair. And I am sorry, I still think that hair needs to be addressed. If he is going to be a legitimate candidate for president, he's going to have to explain it and show what he does.
What if we
tell us if it's real or
pulled
not.
It back a little?
Maybe some relaxer.
Something.
He goes between, when he made his announcement, I watched most of his speech
from
Kentucky when he made the opening speech in, I believe, Lexington. And he was doing the dry look, and I was okay with that. He came out on the Today Show today, and he had the wet look.
Do you think it was wet, or was he just sweaty?
No, he does the wet look quite a lot. He does the wet look, and the wet look screams at me. I'm not just the president. I'm a client. That's what it.
yeah.
That's what
I
it
think
tells
you're
me.
With it. I think you're right. Anyway, he was on with Savannah Guthrie this morning, and this one particular exchange I thought was just a great example of broadcasting, and one that should be taught in our colleges.
And you once offered to drastically
wanted to
cut defense spending, and now you want to increase it 16%. So I just wonder who's mellowed out.
litany of, why don't you let me explain instead of talking over me, okay? Before we go through a litany of things you say I've changed on, why don't you ask me a question? Have I changed my opinion
on that?
That would be
sort of
a better way to approach an interview.
Okay. No. Is Iran
you've editorialized. No. Listen, you've editorialized. Let me answer a question.
And that's when he won the election.
Look, I didn't like the way she did that. I didn't think she needed to go that route with him, but I thought he was hyper defensive.
Yeah,
and
very much
so. You can't go into a national television forum and have that attitude and expect presidential credibility. You can't.
Especially since it's your first interview. It is his first big interview.
It might work on Fox, but it's not going to work on a major network.
You can't screen through that. They teach you to bring your own agenda if you're on the outside looking in, right?
Right.
He tried to bring it too clumsily.
Yeah, he did. And you know, great example of a guy that's probably been slammed by NBC, and he comes on the show and he's fine with it, is John McCain. John McCain
does a great job.
Reserved,
kills,
collected, and he will battle with them, but he will only do it when they get done asking their questions.
And tactfully done. Tactfully done, too.
It looked light. It made them both look lightweight.
Yesterday, two deaths, one to me exponentially sadder than the other. Stan Freberg was 88 and he passed away. He was a radio voiceover advertising writing legend. Here's a little montage. You'll know his voices. He did a lot of Warner Brothers cartoon voices, but never got credit because Mel Blanc's contract said voices are by Mel Blanc. Mm. So even when other people did voices in the cartoons, you didn't see him. So you'll hear one of his commercials here, a couple of his cartoon voices, and also a great parody he did of Dragnet. Here's Stan Freberg.
One half of his lawn has been eaten by a sheep. The other half cut with a Jacobson power mower. How long did it take the sheep to eat that half of your lawn?
Well, he's still eating. I'd say he's been working on it now for about 6 weeks. He's neat, but he's not too fast.
And how long for the Jacobson mower to cut this half?
12 minutes.
Proof positive that the Jacobson mower is faster than sheep.
I am a good speller, I am. C-A-T, dog. B-A-T, Rhode Island.
I'm Mrs. Rabbit, the little fellow's mother. And I've been so worried about him.
The three little pigs were really gassed. They'd never heard such a corny blast.
We played in the west.
We played in the east. We've heard the most, but you're the least.
This is the countryside. My name is St. George. I'm a knight. Saturday, July 10th, 8:05 p.m. I was working out of the castle on the night watch when a call came in from the chief. A dragon had been devouring maidens. Homicide. My job. Slay him.
If you want,
that's when he was really
blast.
Young when he did that.
Yeah,
right?
That's like early 50s. You want to have a blast? Surf some Stan Freberg on YouTube.
That's fun. That's good. Nice tribute to him.
And
Rob.
Just three more real quick clips. He was so great at skewering pop culture of the 50s. He once said, "My records aren't released; they escape," because Capitol would have a hard time releasing his stuff. Here he is versus who was very popular at the time, Lawrence Welk.
What is that noise there? Oh, it's the bubble machine. Turn off. Just a moment. Hold it just a moment, please. Turn off the bubble machine.
And also one of the greatest stabs at Elvis ever.
Could I have a little more echo on my voice? Oh, it's always crowded. That's got it. You still can find.
And no one was doing that in 1956. Stan Freberg.
Cool. No one's doing that now.
Very cool. We appreciate it. Here's another one you might not care for.
Oh, God.
James Best, I believe, also 88, who was a noted acting teacher.
You got to pause on that one.
No, I don't.
You can't. Oh, my God. All right. Go ahead.
I love you, Ron.
I know. He was a noted acting teacher, but he made his money playing Roscoe P. Coltrane on the Dukes of Hazzard. And anyway,
you're going to play a lot of him now, too.
No, I just want to play his laugh. Right?
Okay, because I'm burned out.
That's how they close the show.
Oh, this was an icon. Guy.
Yeah, this was a guy.
No, he was an icon.
Stan Freberg.
He was a character.
So much,
Stan Freberg did a lot of work, obviously. But all right, I'm not going to slam dead people. That's not what I'm going to do. I don't know how I got in that position.
Now this is great. We have a P1, Chris Berenger, who has his kid listening to our podcast in his car seat.
I can't wait for
this. And this, Carla showed me this yesterday.
This is so amazingly cute. Apparently, he likes when dude introduces Mike, and he does it twice here.
sentence is here as he yells Mike. One more time, I want you to hear it.
I hope dude sees that.
I do too. I'll make sure he sees it. It's so cool.
Way to
and
go, dude.
John Cryer, who seems to have great staying power based on the lack of talent, yes, was on the Kelly Lee show yesterday with Michael Strahan.
He's got the new Odd Couple show, right?
No. He's not doing anything right now because Two and a Half Men is gone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're thinking of Matthew Perry.
Two different guys.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But there's a very funny moment brought up when he was working with Ashton Kutcher on Two and a Half Men. Was brought up that in the day, John Cryer dated Demi Moore.
From my understanding, you had a fling with Demi Moore. But I'm curious, how did that go over when you first started working with Ashton Kutcher on Two and a Half Men?
It was a little bit awkward because she and I had dated when he was seven, so.
And that is your magic audio vault. Have a great Wednesday, everybody.
Want more? Make sure you check out the Mike O'Mara Bonus Show. Get it at MikeO'MaraShow.com.
Mike O'Mara Radio Entertainment.